it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Footballistically Arsenal. I'm Boyd Hilton. I'm joined by an absolute star-studded trio of legends. Sidekick Josh is here only for a limited period due to circumstances beyond his control. Hi, Josh. But he was at the game today, so he had to get him on to deliver his verdict. Hi, Josh. How's it going?
I'm going well, Boydo. Yes. I had a brand new daughter who arrived on Thursday. And I'm going to try and join a feed in about 20 minutes. So I'm going to do the first half with you. A bit like Arsenal, ironically. I only really turned up the first half, potentially, in some ways today. But it was amazing. And I had an incredibly understanding, an amazing wife who understood the magnitude of today's North London derby and therefore gave me her blessing to be there.
I've said it before and I'll say it again.
One of our guests.
I'll say it again. Your wife is a hero and a legend. Yes, I saw you were with Ricky Lawrence. Hi, Ricky.
Good evening, guys.
You were there next to Josh and Ben Winston. Was there as well, friend of the pod. How are you? How did you cope with the stress of it all?
I don't know what to say, really. I mean, I think, Josh, I coped okay, didn't I? Thought I was relatively calm.
Yes, you were. I was very calm from the start. I must say, Rick, I did tell you a couple of minutes in we'd be winning today. And you told me I was particularly confident. But yeah, I think we were both calmer than many around us. Some people were really struggling in that final 10 minutes once that penalty had gone in. But there was something in that. I was trying to think, would there have been what was the most comparable moment? Had that gone 3-3, Ricky? I'm trying to think of the most comparable moment as an Arsenal fan. Like, I know we blew it towards the end of last season, but not quite in a 3-0 away at your biggest rival's moment. I was just, Dan, we got Dan Roebuck with us.
Yeah, I was going to say, that was just a brief introductory query to both of you. We've got the joyous Dan Roebuck as well. One of the voices of Arsenal and the living legend. So were you watching presumably on TV, Dan, like me?
No, I was there too.
Oh, you were there as well? I'm the only one who wasn't there. Wow.
Yeah, Dan was there as the voice of Arsenal for following along.
Yeah, for the commentary. I mean, it's interesting because the people who were around me of Arsenal persuasion, the last, you know, when the board are not for 6 minutes, I don't think I've ever seen people be so relieved to get over the line in a situation, because it wasn't just the result. It was, as you guys intimated, it was, the guy I was working with was saying, like, if that had gone 3-3, we don't come back for this for a generation. You know, this is so significant in terms of, you know, the season state, the game state, the derby state, the whole thing was wrapped up in an awful lot of nuance, I thought. And, yeah, Arsenal get over the line, which was tremendous to see at the end. But yeah, it was a very strange game, I thought.
It was weird, wasn't it? Yeah, because you know we went 3-0 up, and yet we didn't really. We didn't dominate that first half. We played pretty well, but I would say for the first 15-20 minutes, I was quite scared by how Spurs were playing okay, and we gave the ball away a bit. We were a bit scrappy, weren't we? I'd say in the first 15-20 minutes, were you guys, Josh, like scared at that point? Did you feel like the game wasn't going our way to start with? The first half?
I don't know. You sort of turn up away at Tottenham and you never really think you're going to go and boss a game and have a really chilled out day. It just never happens. I mean, ironically, I turned to Ricky at half time and we were discussing what our biggest ever away win at Tottenham in the Premier League era was. Mm. And we were.
Looked at this at half time. So
go on then, Dan.
No, go well. Go on.
Well, no, I said I could remember. I thought a 3-1. I think we might have had a couple of 3-1s, but I couldn't think of a bigger one in Premier League times.
Well, at 3-0, it would have been, in terms of winning margin, the biggest in Premier League history.
I'm very pleased.
I look back and basically it was a five. The previous biggest win was a 5-0 success in December of 1978. Alan Sunderland got a hat trick. Liam Brady and Frank Stapleton both scored. At half time, I was looking at these things. Because I thought, well, Arsenal have been sort of a bit odd, but somehow it's 3-0. But you sense that if a fourth came early, there could be some significant records broken. But,
Yeah. So I don't think any of us assumed we were going to turn up for a chilled out day like it so seemed on 64 minutes that it was going to be. But I wasn't overly worried by, you know, what Spurs were doing. I just thought this is going to be a tense game and both sides will have chances and it'll probably be decided by one goal, which it was in the end, just not in the manner that we thought. But it was interesting, boy, just talking about the team, because on the podcast, the Dot and Ethel special, which you and I did, I had said that I felt that there was a game coming for Partey and that he was slowly bringing him in.
Yeah,
and so it proved for both games, which I wasn't necessarily sure it was going to be. And it's amazing how he's timed it, you know, in that regard, and had enough faith to bring him in and make that change. And he's clearly shown us who his favoured left back of all the options that are available to him is. I think once we got to this absolutely key part of the season, and the rest almost picks itself. At the moment. So there were absolutely no complaints from me on the team, but I don't know what anyone else thought.
Well, Partey was interesting, wasn't he? Because on Sky, Paul Merson made the point that, and it shows you the difference between pundits, I think, who watch a team every week. I'm sure Paul watches Arsenal every week in, week out. And he said, you know, he's a bit worried about Thomas Partey being selected because he can take the ball off him. He does, you know, he does make some sometimes slightly, you know, dodgy passes. You know, he's a figure, and of course he's only been back. He only played one full game, which he played really well in the Chelsea game. Don't get me wrong, but I, like Mercer, was slightly scared, and I think he proved, didn't he, Ricky? I don't know what you felt. I think he proved early on he was a little bit scrappy, and he did give the ball away a couple of times in dangerous positions.
A little bit, but he also did some really good stuff. I thought Partey had a good game. I think also, it's probably worth acknowledging that Partey and Rice haven't really played much together at all.
Yeah.
So I think you have to give them maybe a bit of cut them some slack in the fact that they're probably finding their feet in terms of a partnership. Probably, you know, by the time they find them, I'd be surprised if Partey was still at Arsenal next season. So, I mean, I'd like to think that Rice will have a new partner next season. But, I think that Partey deserves to play, and I think he justified his selection personally. Funnily enough, one of the guys in front of me was begging, in fact, behind and in front of me, was begging for Jorginho to come on. But I, as I said to Josh, I was quite happy with the team. I didn't really feel we needed to make any changes. I think Arteta got it spot on in that sense. And with Tommy Asu at left back, I think he got that spot on as well.
Yeah. Dan, am I being slightly harsh with...
I think it was only the third time that Ødegaard, Rice and Partey had played in midfield together. They played Community Shield as midfield. Partey had played right back, weirdly, as we know on the odd occasion. But it was only the third time that they played, obviously, in midweek against Chelsea. It surprised me a little bit. It surprised me that he played, I think he played the full 90, didn't he, in midweek, which surprised me because he did look rusty before, but he had a really good game against Chelsea. And I thought he was, you know, more than okay today. But it did surprise me a little bit. You know, you get to this stage of the season and you think they'll, you know, squad rotates a little bit more. But the weird thing about that Arsenal sort of starting at 11 and what we all might perceive is the strongest 11, that seems to change every 2 or 3 months. And I think that's, you know, to Mikel Arteta's credit, he will take on board who he feels is in form, who he feels is right for the game, who he feels is you know, particularly well for the system he wants to play, which is different again today. You know, when you look at an awful lot of the metrics, Spurs had, were XG, possession, shots, the opposition penalty area, Spurs had more than us. That's so unusual, you know, passing accuracy, everything. So I thought he got... I think that it wasn't a great Arsenal performance today, but, I mean, it turned out to be a great Arsenal win just for the result and scrambling over the line. But, yeah, Partey's interesting. That your sense that Partey, Odegaard and Rice is what he wanted. You know, that's why he bought the players. That's why he bought Rice. But it's developed over the season, I think.
I couldn't believe it was the first time we've done back-to-back league wins in 36 years against Tottenham.
That's extraordinary,
Dan. Right?
1988, yeah. That is there's some really good stuff from Opta that's come out post match. That's one of them, and the other one. What was the other one that I saw?
There was a good Saka stat about his first.
He was the
first Englishman.
Yeah, Englishman
to score home and away.
Home and away. Yeah, he looked thrilled about that in the post match interview. Saka was peak Saka. I don't know if you've had a chance to see it. So brilliantly happy. He was like, yeah, we're watching the game on the coach back home. We're going to have a shower. He was just in great form. Yeah.
The other random stat is not really an Arsenal stat, but Spurs are the 16th different team to concede 50 Premier League goals this season. Most side to concede 50 in an English top flight season since 1909-10. It's just football is different in England, it seems, this season. Yeah. Just lots of goals. And Spurs are adding to those that are going in the wrong net, thankfully.
And we're scoring the most of them. And
absolutely. Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I mentioned recently how I was getting a little bit pissed off with the fact that every game we play, a pundit always says the thing that our record of corners and free kicks is amazing. And I didn't think we'd actually done anything with the corner for quite a long time by us. But today absolutely proved that point emphatically. And it was the key, wasn't it, Ricky? Like the corners were phenomenal today.
Yeah, I mean, I actually just before we started, I had a bit of the punditry on and I was enjoying them. They didn't actually discuss it. They were discussing why no one from Spurs came to sort of move Ben White away from Vicario. And I very much enjoyed Ben White just giving Vicario a little flick on the hand before the first one.
Was he trying to get his glove off, do you think?
It looked like
to sort of get the Velcro on his glove.
Just tactic,
yeah. I guess. King shithouse, Ben White. I mean, absolute outstanding shithousery today.
Yeah, I just love the guy. And, you know, it's amazing how... I guess it's like another, you know, a tool in our armory, if that's the right expression, that we are able to not really play well and still score two goals because we've got this, you know, ability to score so many from set pieces. I think we're four ahead of Everton, who've scored the most from set pieces this season. So it's obviously a great ace up our sleeve.
Absolutely, yeah. I'd like to dedicate this podcast, actually. So the third goal, the Declan Rice cut corner, I don't know if you saw this, but on TV, there was this horrendous kind of like guy with long hair who was yelling at Declan from the Spurs fan. I'm going to show you now. Showing up now. See the guy in the blue. He's like an Alan Davis lookalike gone wrong. And he was yelling dog's abuse at him. I was like... I know it's for opposition fans. I know he's trying to put him off, but he then delivered the ball that led to the third goal beautifully. And I thought that is karma for that.
I've got to be honest. I've, I'm not a massive, this is a little bit against the grain, but I don't actually enjoy Declan Rice taking our corners that much. But
that's changed, hasn't it? That's changed halfway through the season. It's
yeah, strange, yeah. Because, I mean, he scored against Man United from a corner, albeit sort of, you know, from his feet. And it just frustrates me that someone who's so good in the air has to resort to taking corners when you like to think someone who's not so good in the air could put in a good ball. But obviously, you know, we've scored so many from his corner as well. I just wish he was on the end of them rather than having to take them. But that, I guess
that was post Dubai trip, wasn't it? Yeah, that they changed the corner. And I think he's been a pretty brilliant corner taker. I have to say.
He has for the most part. I just wish he's so good in the air.
We've got some pretty tall people there anyway, Josh. But how was when we went 3-0 up, the atmosphere must have been, it just must have been delirious. You couldn't believe it. Like I was, I cannot believe I'm actually get a chance to enjoy this Tottenham Arsenal match, you know, and kind of not worry about them coming back. Although someone on our WhatsApp group did say we need a fourth, just even at that point.
Should have got one.
We should have, exactly.
It was great though in the away end, Ricky, wasn't it? It was great fun. Scored that third until we conceded the Romero goal. It was song after song. I don't know how it felt, Dan, obviously in a more central position, how noisy or not it felt, but the goading of the Spurs fans was great. Definitely some fans seemed to not return for the second half in a few parts of the stadium. We can't say, you know, hundreds or thousands, but definitely some who got up on the third goal and had had enough. It was a really brilliant away end and vital. And I'm so with Dan on that feeling that he mentioned some sort of Arsenal people around him were worrying about the impact, because it would have been like, forget what Liverpool have done in the last couple of weeks. This would have been like Arsenal choking on such a level to throw a 3-goal lead away. And do you remember that? Was it Liverpool at Palace? Didn't they throw a three-goal lead away to like when they were still had a chance in the title race?
And trying to score more goals for the goal difference.
Yeah, we were thinking.
Yeah, of course.
It was so enjoyable. And you know what? And I think even the players at full time needed a minute almost and then they jogged over.
It
was, you know, realizing what it is to, because, you know, victories at Tottenham, as we just alluded, their back to back ones have been there only since the year Ricky and I were born, like basically back in 88, 87. Like a massive thing to do. But it's interesting now because City have obviously gone and won, and their hardest game left is probably Tottenham away, a ground that they have struggled on. But the fear is that they are currently 7 points behind Aston Villa, having played two games less. So you think, okay, they could get back into it. But the problem is, you know, Tottenham go away to Chelsea and away to Liverpool, and Villa have got to play Brighton, who are in something close to free fall. There is a chance this is done, you know, by the time that game happens. And, you know, Tottenham are not going to have very much to play for at all. There is every chance that they could effectively be fifth and be in a weird little league of their own come those final two games of the season. You know, in some ways, you actually need Man United and Newcastle to possibly be hunting them down for even fifth. So what we just desperately need is a scenario where Tottenham have something riding on that game against City, because that feels like that could be the last hope. And wow, what a moment that could be if Spurs can yet do us a favour.
Yeah, it's weird. I worked yesterday with a doing a game, a foreign game, and the producer is a Spurs fan, and he was suggesting that it doesn't even matter whether Spurs have got Champions League on the line. They would rather lose that game. That's how bitter. That's what Spurs fans are like. They would rather not see Arsenal win the league. So I think that's undeniable.
You know,
I sort of worry. I think Postecoglou probably doesn't get it yet. Maybe, I don't know. And I think he'll want his team to win regardless. I think there isn't that real strength between team and fans at Spurs. So I think hopefully they'll just go out and play their game and maybe win. I didn't see the Forest game, so I don't know how. I looked at some of the stats at halftime, and it felt like Forest were unlucky. Is that true?
Really unlucky. They had loads of chances. It was quite I could not believe how well they played. But their striker, what's his name?
Chris Wood missing chances.
Chris Wood missed chances. Yeah, it was terrible. Like two or three fairly straightforward chances. Ricky?
If the shoe was on the other foot, I'd happily finish, you know, bottom half if it meant that Spurs, if we denied Spurs
the chance to win
the league. However, there's no way that someone like, just picking a name out, you know, Kulusevski or James Maddison would rather stop Arsenal winning the league than play Champions League.
Yeah, that's a really good point. They want to play. Yeah,
it's got to get to that point first. And hopefully, do you know what? Hopefully we don't have to rely on Spurs, but I'd probably take that now because it means we've won our next two games at least. But yeah, I think if Forest would have done us a favour today, I think today would have just been almost too perfect because you'd suddenly be three games away from winning the league with it in our hands. Yeah. But, you know, we've just beaten Spurs. And I think we just have, you know, we just have to keep putting pressure on. We have to keep putting the ball in their court. Because I think we play before them this week. I think before them the week after. They play before us, then we play the Sunday, then they play against Spurs. So there is a time where we will be going to the game second if they, you know.
Yes, they've got Fulham on the Saturday, the 11th of May.
Yeah.
And then we'll obviously play United at Old
and
Trafford.
Hopefully we go top at United if you know, City do win their games. And then we guess we do pray for Spurs. And then if we have to pray for West Ham to do us a favour, you know, you only have to look back. I know it didn't quite happen, but what was it two seasons ago when City almost threw it away at Villa, against Villa at home, when Liverpool had a hand on the title, and then City clawed it all back late on. So it's not over till it's over, but it's just a shame that, I guess, you know, time is probably going to get away from us, or games are going to get away from us. But yeah.
Yeah, I was going to get into all this after the break, but, you know, it's good to... It's good to cover the possibilities. We could talk a little bit more about the game. I wanted to mention who you think man of the match was, because some people think it's Kai Havertz. Some people, I think Gabriel won, got official man of the match, I think. And look forward more to the fixtures coming up after this break.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And we're back from the break. We've lost Josh. He's had a baby emergency. Not really. He's just going to enjoy feeding the baby, which is fair enough. We've still got the great Dan and the great Rick.
Fair play to Josh. I mean, look his good lady is letting him out not only to go to the North London Derby away from home, but also to appear for the first half of the podcast as well at, you know, sort of
mid late
evening on a Sunday. So she's a diamond, obviously.
She's person of the match, maybe. You know, it could be. Yeah.
But person of the pod.
That's
P-O-T-
for sure.
P-O-T-P.
Exactly. But I wanted to mention who you thought was, like, Kai Havertz thought had a fucking brilliant game. Absolutely brilliant game. And kind of all of the positivity about him in the last few weeks, and, you know, I thought came absolutely shiningly true. A real, like, you know, holding up the ball, centre-forward play. And the pass for the goal, for Saka's goal, was beautiful, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'd take Havertz. I think I'd take Saka for my personal man of the match. I mean, he doesn't get the assist for the own goal corner. That's just the rules of Opta. But he took his goal so well. It's like, you know, defenders know what he's going to do, but they still can't stop him. It's that sort of vibe, isn't it? When he gets onto that and just cuts inside, and then it was such a good goal. I thought it was, you know, he got whacked by Ben Davis a few times, as he always does every single game, as all Arsenal fans know. I just think he's such a phenomenal footballer. Havertz has been brilliant. I'm never quite sure whether Mikel Arteta actually bought him to be a striker, but that's what's working at the minute. I think he bought him to be the sort of Xhaka replacement. That didn't work, or it might work in the future, I don't know. But I'd probably say Saka shaded it for me.
Rick?
Yeah, I think I would actually go with Havertz. I feel like it was almost too easy for Saka playing against Ben Davis, who's barely
that's fair.
It's almost unfair. And that's, you know, I don't mean that in a disrespectful way to Ben Davis, but if that was against Udogie, I think it's a much, much harder matchup for Saka.
Yes.
And I thought Havertz was playing, probably Van de Ven is probably one of the best centre-backs in the league. And Havertz was great. Right? And Romero's, you know, a very good player, and I thought Havertz was just brilliant. Funny enough, my friend messaged himself. He thought Havertz was great in the first half. And sometimes when you're in the away end and low down like I was today, it was difficult to sort of, you know, pinpoint performances in the first half, especially Havertz being a bit further away. And he didn't touch the ball much. But yeah, second half, I think he held up the ball nicely. He almost got an assist for Saka. I thought he was great, but he just sort of grew in stature even more so today. Led the line, held the ball up when he could, won free kicks really well. Thought it was a really mature performance. And I definitely agree, Dan. It's quite an interesting dilemma, I guess, because I do think all the talk was that Arteta bought him to play in midfield, and he started in midfield. And I do really like Jesus, but again, I didn't want Arteta to make any subs. I didn't feel like he needed to put Jesus on or, you know, mix it up, really, bring on Jorginho. This is probably a conversation for another day, but it's interesting to know what Arteta is thinking next season. Do we sign a striker and then Havertz will have to really be on rotation
or playing midfield,
is he going to sign a midfielder and have it be a striker?
These questions are always for now on the podcast, Rick,
because
we've run free with but that's a good point, because Merson also said on Sky that he thought was he kind of made a similar point, which was that how do you get a world-class number nine, sign them, not being able to guarantee them essentially first team football, because you've got Havertz doing so well in that role right now. And, you know, would you say sign someone that good who's going to have to sit on the bench in theory for quite a long time? Now, this is all, you know, assuming Arsenal do go for a centre forward, a striker. But it's an interesting dilemma, isn't it, Dan? I think you're absolutely right. He did not sign him, did he? Maybe he signed him as he signed him knowing how versatile he is. And the thing that everyone's been saying about him is, what is his best role? Well, I think we found his best role for us.
Yes, striker. I mean, people said, well, you know, Chelsea didn't use him in the right way. They used him as a central striker. He's not a central striker. Well, maybe he is, you know. It's a difficult one. But earlier this season, you know, everyone was suggesting, well, you know, Arsenal weren't putting their chances away, and this is why you've got to get a Haaland-type striker or a Watkins or a Tony or whatever. Is Havertz best as a striker or best as a left-sided sort of attacking midfielder arriving late? I don't know. I sort of tend to trust Mikel Arteta on that one. Just going back to what Rick was saying and Josh previously about the away end, I just wanted to know what you thought about the atmosphere today, because we were in the opposite side to where you are. We're really high up. We're just behind this sort of we're on the TV gantry for this game. And I thought the atmosphere was not as it was last year or the year before. I don't know what you felt. I mean, the away end was great. I don't know what the allocation was as well today, but what was it? Well, what did you think the atmosphere was like today? From, you know, I didn't think it was as it was previously. I don't know.
So I've been at all three visits to the new stadium, obviously. The first one being up there with one of my worst footballing memories.
Yeah. That atmosphere, though, to credit to Spurs, when Holding was sent off, that atmosphere I thought was unbelievably hot and hostile and mad. You know, and last year
atmosphere in general, or the Arsenal fans, and Spurs
mainly, because obviously there's 50,000 of them. But you know, I just wondered how you felt it was, maybe from a fan point of view and from an Arsenal player point of view, whether they felt it was like more intimidating or not. I thought they were down today.
No, I think we were probably lucky in the sense that we obviously kept the fans quiet up until the end. And
yeah,
I guess the atmosphere as a whole did definitely get a little bit more hot when they
They re-engaged a little bit when it went to 3-2, didn't they? But yeah, I just thought.
I know what you mean, Dan, because I thought I had noticed that on the Sky coverage, they kept bigging up the atmosphere in anticipation that the atmosphere would be amazing from the Spurs fans mainly, and that it would be incredibly intimidating, and it was a real test for the Arsenal players to deal with it. And actually, I thought, and I couldn't work out whether it was just the audio or that they stopped talking about that as soon as, about 5 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
It was like, actually, I didn't feel that the atmosphere was that intimidating.
I don't know if any of you went to Wolves the other week. I thought Wolves were livelier than Spurs. I've got to say that.
Yeah, and Forest today, you know, very lively against City as well. Forest fans were amazing, sounded like. So I did, and I thought it was interesting they just didn't mention it after that. I mean, once they got back to particularly 3-2, and Gary Neville's doing his ooh, you know, and it became a cauldron. But that's a bit late in the day. That's like any fans would have turned into a cauldron. I want to ask you about the key goal that let them back in, the David Raya mistake. What do you think? Can we, you know, is there any way of analysing that? Is it? I mean, I messaged in our WhatsApp group saying if Tottenham come back from this, I'm never ever going to forgive David Raya as long as I live. Now that might be being too harsh, but I was like, at that point, we were particularly cruising along. I felt so happy. It was a stroll, wasn't it? It was like, you know, barely any danger. They had the odd moment, but we had moments as well. Could have made it four. And then for him to do that, it just felt like the most perverse thing to do I could think of. What did you think?
I felt like we'd sort of seen out the first. What minute was that in?
64, was it? 65,
yeah, I felt like we'd seen out the first, like, the beginning of the half quite well.
Yeah.
Almost to the point where Spurs is, you know, they're obviously going to come out, start the second half with a load of enthusiasm. But we actually looked by far away, we actually played our best football in that period. Yeah. Looked like we were going to score. And I think Spurs fans were probably thinking, okay, this is done. So it came at the worst moment, really. But in fairness, and I think Arteta said something about this after, it's one of those things, you know, he tries that pass. He shouldn't try that pass. But if you gave him the ball 10 times, he would probably only try that pass one time and it's happened to go really wrong. But you shouldn't be chipping the ball in that position, especially when you're 3-0 up in that kind of game. But, or any time really. However, it was just, make a positive out of it, his reaction to that in terms of claiming crosses was, especially when you're in your way end, or even if you're watching on TV, you see these crosses come in and every single one, bar the one that went off the pitch at the final whistle, he caught.
Yeah,
makes such a difference. I wasn't worried, not that they wouldn't score, but when they were crossing the ball, because I just thought he was going to catch it. And it was such a relief. And funny enough, when he came over to the fans, he held up his hands as if to say sorry. But, you know, footballers will make mistakes and some of them will get away with it and some of them won't. And I guessed, on one hand, he did get away with it. On the other hand, he did really well with the rest of his performance by just catching everything that he could. So fair play to him for reacting.
Yeah,
didn't shirk away from getting the ball at his feet either after that.
I would make exactly the same point. Everything that came in, his confidence and composure with high balls inside the area. It was good anyway. And then from that minute onwards, he was under a little bit more scrutiny because of what happened. And he nailed it. And it was weird about what you say about when he comes over to the fans, because he was the last one there, I think, wasn't he? All the outfield players raced over there sort of straight away, and there was a lot of celebration. And then I noticed as I was starting to sort of pack my equipment away that there was one person still out there, and it was David Raya. I think he was the last to go back to the dressing rooms. I thought that was a real nice touch for him. I think he believes, and I don't know because I never spoke to him, but I think he believes he's still probably got to win over a certain section of fans.
I was about to say he's probably not the least popular, but of the players that you know are going to start every week, just because of how popular Ramsdale was. Made a couple of errors like early on, and you know, he doesn't have this big personality, which is probably what Arteta likes him. He doesn't seem to have a big personality anyway. So, you know, like Ramsdale is a big character in goal, but sometimes maybe people might think a little bit too big when he gives it to the other fans and things like that. Raya's obviously that's not his style. And funnily enough, I got in the ground early enough to see Ramsdale putting some crosses into David Raya to catch. And you just look at Ramsdale, and I know this is old, but he probably still can't believe that he was just Arsenal number one without any shadow of a doubt. And now he's having to warm up the opposite or his you know, contender in goal in our biggest game of the season. And I think I do agree, right? It's not, I don't think he necessarily have to win over fans because of his performances. It's more just that, like, he still doesn't almost feel like, you know, I mean, we haven't signed him officially yet. He probably feels a little bit still like a loney, but I think that will just change. It's so nice.
But I think as well, Rick, you're in the way. I think things like that, that a lot of people won't see, comes over to the away support in a big game like that and sort of realises it. And if you're there, if you're in the moment and you see that, that's something that you take away from you. If you're watching on TV, you might not see it. And I thought that was a really interesting. And because he could, you know, he's won the game. It doesn't really matter. The error's not cost points. He could have, you know, gone with the squad or gone down the tunnel. It didn't really matter. But I think that was him not just buying into what Arteta wants to do, but it's buying into the club, it's buying into the fans, it's realizing that, you know, he I think he just felt that connection. You know, you could easily see that being a different way, and no one would care, no one would mind, it wouldn't really matter, but Arteta, just a little thing.
Arteta gave him an extra big hug, I thought, at the end, and had a long chat with him. I don't know if you saw when he after the game, when the game finished, seemed to be like whispering in his ear lots of thanks. And I think it was probably due to what, as you said, Ricky, that's partly why apparently we signed him, isn't it? The goalkeeping coach said that he's one of the best in the world at gathering crosses. And I thought, to start with, I remember his first few games, I didn't think he was very good at that, but he really is good at that, isn't he? And I think he's well in the golden, whatever it is, the golden glove.
Bizarrely, it's Jordan Pickford who's on his tail, which I looked at today. Is he two off or something like that? How has that happened?
And his own mistake, obviously, today is affecting that record, with our incredible away clean sheet record that he is a key part of. But I think it's fascinating that with him, that he seems such a quiet, as you say, not the opposite of Aaron Ramsdale, off the pitch, like a very quiet, unassuming guy. Maybe it's a language thing, I don't know. But within games, he's so confident. And I think almost his mistakes, all the mistakes he's made, and I'm thinking of the one in the Champions League when he went so far up the pitch, didn't he? Against Bayern Munich, I think it was.
The
home leg, and Gabriel was like, why are you standing 2 feet away from me? And, you know, halfway. And that, it all comes from a bit, almost arrogance within games. He feels, I think, arrogance / a little bit of complacency is the other way of looking at it. But I just thought, I think he what does mean is when he makes a mistake, he recovers brilliantly. And it's almost like, whereas I see other goalkeepers make mistakes and they look pale and withdrawn and they kind of feel it affects the rest of their performance. But he absolutely doesn't. And so I will give him that credit. But if they had have come back, then I think we would have had a conversation.
I think that's a touch harsh in terms of, I don't think it's arrogant. I think he's also coached. Like, even today, I think it seemed like we were trying to play a lot slower. Almost, you know, we were letting Spurs come at us. Goal kicks at 0-0, we were slowing down. He wasn't rushing them. It wasn't like we were trying to take the game to them so much. I think that was a game plan. And, you know, if you're being really harsh, or maybe like Ramsdale could make the same mistake Rye did, but he wouldn't come and catch all those crosses. And I think
I agree, I can justify
the keeper change that we made almost, you know, you can make it that simple. But I think that's how he's been told to play at us. I imagine the language thing isn't, because I think he's been in England for a long time, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's true. That's a stupid point. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Yeah. He's had to speak English at Brentford and et cetera.
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, players will make mistakes. You don't want to make them in a North London derby. Like, Jorginho made a huge error in the first game, and obviously we ended up drawing that game. But Raya, I guess, has got away with it somehow, but he did contribute in a big way, I think.
Yeah. What did you make down of the penalty, Declan Rice? I thought it was interesting. Hardly anyone on it. I don't know what you said in your commentary, but it was a penalty because it was a penalty.
I mean, initially he looked like he was trying to clear the ball and it was a bit of a mess. And then when you see it and slow it down, he's missed the ball and he's kicked the player. And it was a pretty easy one to give. I don't think we could complain on that, really.
Yeah, but it was like he was trying to get the ball, was coming down, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's accidental. It's not malicious.
Exactly. But he's caught him completely.
I think this penalty is a stupid penalty. It's unfortunately a rule that I don't know how you would even begin to outlaw in football. But you see them given quite a lot, where a player like Ben Davis didn't try to control the ball. He didn't try and do anything on the ball. He knew, as players do, if he touched it, he was getting kicked. If he got there before Declan Rice, he was getting kicked. I think Michael Oliver knew it as well, but again,
that's why I think he didn't give it.
It was a weird one because initially I thought he's not giving it. He's going to move on, and then suddenly he because play restarted, didn't it, for a split second?
Yeah.
So I thought, got away with that one, and then suddenly Michael Oliver with the old sort of finger to the ear, hang on a second.
Yeah. It's a really annoying just rule in football where you can make no effort to actually do anything with the ball, but if you touch it first and get kicked, then it's a penalty. I don't know how you'd ever go about stopping that because, you can't really argue the decision. But, I think similar to the Chelsea game last night, the referee's staring straight at it. I think he was anyway. You can see it.
Yeah, he was 2 feet away.
From the away end, like it looked like a penalty because we've all seen that sort of thing happen. But it's much easier for the ref to just wait, be told that it's definitely a penalty, then go and give it. And it's a nonsense. But we did get away. I guess we... In inverted commas, got away with one with VAR as well today, as obviously they scored to make it 1-1.
That was tight.
That was really tight, wasn't it? Yeah, and kind of on. Did you think you see it clearly one way or the other? Because on Sky, Gary Neville was going one from one to the other. It was like
in real time. It's just a goal.
And
you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, nobody complains at all. And even if it was on Match of the Day, you'd just say, "Yeah, he's onside," or pretty much you wouldn't debate it. But you know, where we can get the lines drawn in, and that suggests it was offside. That's just VAR, isn't it? I don't get obsessed about VAR. I must admit, it just is what it is.
Yeah, there were some Arsenal fans not far from us who started cheering before they ruled out. We'd obviously got a message or...
It was on. We saw that. We had the monitor on the gantry and we seemed to know before the referee knew, which is a bit odd. But
I've had that again before where other fans...
And that is rubbish. We don't want to go down the rabbit hole of saying how bad VAR is, but that's rubbish when, you know, certain people know before the referee and the players.
It's a nonsense.
It's a mess, isn't it?
They had a couple of penalty claims as well, which I don't think there was one.
There was like a double one, wasn't there? And then that led to Arsenal go at the other end. None of them were penalties, I don't think.
I don't
think there's any issues there. They can't have any complaints in that sphere, I don't think.
No, and to give Ange Postecoglou his credit, he didn't. He blames his own team completely for what went wrong. He didn't really defend them in any way. So where do we go from? So we touched upon this in the first half, but I want to, you know, we've got to look, you know, frankly and as objectively can about the run-ins. It's now a two-horse race. I mean, that makes it more simpler, doesn't it? I mean, I feel sorry for Liverpool a little bit, but I feel sorry for them. And yet there's a whole load of Liverpool fans, online Liverpool fans, who are very, very cocky about, you know, we know how to handle this. Arsenal will slip away, drop away. I mean, that has been absolutely proven to be a joke because they've absolutely fallen away, haven't they, in a much more embarrassing way, perhaps even than us last year. Because last year they've had injuries, but, you know, they've got a big enough squad to cope. They've just seems to have collapsed mentally and physically. But so it's better that it's just a two-horse race, but... Do either of you, from the way you were talking in the first half of this podcast, I feel like you both feel like we've got this is still open, that Man City could still drop points. Is that fair? Do you see that they're going to? Because I don't. I think they're going to win all the rest of their games at a fair trot. Dan,
I wouldn't.
Rick, sorry, Rick.
I wouldn't bet on City dropping a point. I wouldn't put a penny. Unfortunately. And I've said they were going to win their games from, I don't know, probably before we even lost to Villa. But when there's, you know, still games to be played, we still have hope. And I don't really think we can have much more than that.
I'm just looking at the sort of, crikey, I'm just looking at the City record here. I mean, they have, what have they done here? I mean, they are in the Premier League, they've won their last five. And obviously the last time they dropped points was Arsenal at home. Prior to that, Liverpool away. Prior to that, Chelsea at home. I mean, they've won... Yeah.
I think the difference this season for me personally, sorry Dan, is that if we win our next three games and City win their next four, then you just hold your hands up and it's no disgrace.
Not at all. It's felt differently, hasn't it, this season?
Different. Last season, you know, drawing at Liverpool from being 2-0 up, then drawing at West Ham being 2-0 up.
Then the Southampton.
It felt like we threw away, as this season you just go like, to be honest, you know, not to go back to the Villa game, but I think Villa was so good on that day. Yeah. I don't even get annoyed by that result, because I just think sometimes, you know, you don't play at your best. The other team are brilliant, and you just have to go, yeah, okay, you're not going to win every single game over a 38-game season. So I even just caught Roy Keane saying as well, you know, Paul Merson was saying Arsenal are going to be more affected next season if we don't win it, if we win our next three games.
I don't believe that.
Disagree. And Roy Keane was saying, the only reason they're not going to win it is because we're competing with one of the best teams of all time. So
yeah, I don't believe
just
that.
Unlucky.
Yeah, I didn't agree with Merson about that. I think that was a weird point, because he was saying, imagine psychologically how you feel if Arsenal win the rest of their games and still don't win the league. But I think psychologically you feel we've absolutely done the best we could. Yeah. And that gives you an incredible impetus, doesn't it? Especially with 115 charges hanging over.
we talked about this last year, Josh, and people were saying, this is Arsenal's best chance. They'll never have as good a chance as this.
Yeah, I thought
we were saying, well, that's ridiculous. Of course they will have a goodest chance, you know, and I don't want to come across all Alan Alger about it, but he will tell you about the odds for last season, the odds for this season, and the odds for this season for Arsenal to win the league were a lot shorter than they were last season. And next season they'll be shorter still, win or lose. You know, Arsenal are building something very, very special and very, very good, and the trajectory is only going one way at the moment. And this season, if Arsenal do miss out, it's only going to be by ninth. City against Wolves at home, Fulham away, Spurs away, West Ham at home. We keep talking about the Spurs game as the only one that they might slip up, but you really do never know. I've started to get a little bit concerned about Bournemouth next weekend, to be honest.
Oh, same. Oh, completely. Because
Bournemouth suddenly are flying, aren't they? I mean, yeah. I know Brighton have fell apart, but I did not expect them to win 3-0 today. But just keep it to the last day. So, you know, we can all watch the Spurs game in a pub and just think, you know, half a chance here. You never know. And Rick made the and I never even thought about this. Forget about the fans, because I know Spurs fans, and they will go on about they just don't want it to happen. But James Maddison wants to play in the Champions League. Kulusevski wants to play. Son wants to play. Yeah. All those players. Postecoglou wants his team in the Champions League. And if they've got a chance with two games to go to catch Aston Villa, he will be reminding them about the responsibilities to the club, to themselves, to the manager, to what that means. And that will be as a big as an incentive. And you can be a bitter Spurs fan and don't want it to happen, but the reality is probably going to be something different. So,
we now need Spurs to start doing well, don't we? We need them to beat Chelsea this week.
We need James Maddison to do like a player that can play in the Champions League rather than the Championship, because he's been awful for quite a long time. So,
who has? Sorry,
James Maddison.
Oh yeah.
He was poor today as well, wasn't he?
I think he was poor today. He was poor today. But what I was saying was, we need Spurs to do well enough so they're still in with a shout, don't we?
They can win. Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, they can win the rest of their game. If they win the rest of the games, I'll be very
happy. Be delighted. the one thing I think, like a lot of people, will, you know, again, I keep mentioning Merson on Sky. In fact, all of the pundits on Sky, I think, were agreed that Manchester City were going to win the rest of their games. My only slight... the fact that we have got this much better goal difference as it stands does mean, doesn't it, that they only need to draw a game. Yep. And that's different for me. That's the one thing I'm clinging to, is that, maybe Fulham or something, you know, with nothing particularly to play for, but just the freedom to do, you know, I don't know.
Can you imagine a situation where they draw one game and then the last game of the season just turns into Man City trying to beat West Ham like 5-0, and we're sweating beating Everton 1-0 or something like that?
I can absolutely see that.
Seven goals. So it should be,
shouldn't it? Especially because you think, I mean, I feel like if I say it, I'm going to curse it, but you think we could get a bigger goal difference with some games coming up as well, as you say. I mean, including the Everton game.
I know. We're playing against Jordan Pickford, who's, you know, just a couple of kicks behind.
Yeah, that's
true. Bournemouth are good, and then Man United are. Let's not worry about goal difference.
Yeah, let's not worry about goal difference. But that is a crack of light for me.
The fact that they can draw and not lose is a huge... I don't think we expect them to lose any game, but...
No, exactly.
Maybe they can draw on.
Well, let's officially do the predictions then. It's time for the Bournemouth 12:30 kickoff, I think, on Saturday. Yeah, that's right. As you say, Dan, they have Bournemouth doing pretty well at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know where it's come from. I mean, the problem with Bournemouth is, I think with Andoni Iraola, there was a lot of chat about him being a real chaotic coach and someone who'll sort of really bring some attacking football. And they were awful at the start of the season. You thought, well, this guy's an absolute fraud. But then suddenly they've got good, and I think he is desperate to finish as high as possible. I think they've already got their record points tally for a top flight season. Not that they've had too many seasons in the top flight. And you've got Dominic Solanke, who is you know, if Kane's going to go to the Euros and Watkins going to go to Euros, if England go for another striker and Ivan Toney has got this weird situation going on at Brentford, is Solanke the next cab off the rank? And if so, has he got a massive point to prove against the best defence in the league? So there's that little sort of thing as well. But I still think Arsenal will win. I'll go for a 3-1 Arsenal win. Nice. Is my prediction.
And Rick?
Yeah, I think I've probably predicted the same scoreline every single time I've been on this podcast. So I'll just stick there. I'll stick to 2-0 to Arsenal. Bournemouth are a good side. They've had an unbelievable season, really. To not even flirt with relegation is fantastic. But yeah, I think I've been impressed with the way we've dispatched with teams in certain games this season, and I hope that we can do the same next week.
And I think that's a real key difference. It's like, you know, you mentioned that run of last season, this time last season when it all went to, you know, and the Southampton and the Brighton, and Arsenal just feel like there's a real fear factor back. Villa played well, West Ham was a bit of an anomaly, Fulham was weird, you know, this season. But I think there's a real fear factor with Arsenal. They tend, and even today, you know, did Arsenal really play well today? No, you know, but still won 3-2, you know. So I think Arsenal win the last three games. United are a bit of a basket case. Everton won't care last game of the season. That's three wins. It's
game season is just, you know, how things can just change so much. Remember when Conte and Tuchel had that argument on the. Like Spurs haven't played at Chelsea since then. Like two different managers, a whole, you know, a whole host of things have happened in the meantime.
That's incredible. Is that right? That's incredible.
Yeah, that's the last time they played there.
But, that was so weird, that weird handshake thing.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, can win our next two games and still not win the league, but I definitely feel like in a better place moving forward now than I did
100%. 100%. And if we do win those three games, I think we're a point less than the points we got in the you know, undefeated year, you know. So, I mean, that's pretty incredible, isn't it, really? I agree. I think if we win our last two games, I think we're going to beat Bournemouth, I think 3-0, I'll go for. And I think we'll win our last three games, and that will be a fantastic achievement. And all the stress of this afternoon, of that final period against Spurs, which was one of the most excruciating things I've experienced, we should say. I had to go for a walk. I had to go for a long walk afterwards just to shake the stress and... tension off, but we've come through that. That's pretty incredible as well, as you say, even though we didn't play that well. Well, Dan and Rick, it's been a joy. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Discuss an incredibly eventful day. And Josh, thank you to Josh as well, and congratulations on his newborn baby daughter. And we'll be back roughly probably this time next week. See you then. Bye.
If you want to advertise on or sponsor this show, check us out at playbackmedia.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.